Welcome back. You're listening to the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast about watching soccer on TV and online. Welcome to episode 171. Coming up on this week's show, the world anxiously awaits the return of the Bundesliga. We've got the dates for when the other major leagues return. Hal Fox has ballsed up German soccer's return before it's even started. And big news for fans of the US women's national team. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and this week I'm joined by a special co-host. Kartik is still with us, but he's not on the podcast this week. We've got the one and only Gary O'Reilly. Hey Gary, how you doing?
Hey Chris, thank you. What a build-up. Thank you very
happy. I was thinking about this, Gary. There's probably four categories of people that know you in different ways. There's probably a bunch of old-timers like myself who remember you from the playing days in the 1980s, playing for Tottenham Hotspur, Brighton and Hove Albion, even Birmingham City, I think, on loan, and, of course, Crystal Palace. And then there's the category of people who probably remember you as a co-commentator through many of the glory years of the Premier League in the, 1990s and into the noughties, I would imagine.
Yeah, from the early noughties, when it was XFM, and then it became Sirius XM, and through radio, we used to do a lot of Premier League broadcasts for radio over here in the US, and then obviously onto TV.
So the TV, the audience that watched Fox Soccer Channel a lot back in its heyday. Would have remembered you and probably Steve Banyard, especially on the late game on Saturdays. You seem to always be on that one, as well as many other games too, but a very familiar voice to a lot of listeners who grew up watching soccer, football on television in the States. Then the third category is the Neil deGrasse. I mean, so the science podcast that you do with Neil and colleagues, which is actually quite different for, I mean, because there will be people that will remember you or remember your voice through there too.
Well, I hope they're still listening to it. The podcast is Star Talk Sports Edition. And if you're familiar with the astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, you'll know he is a wonderful asset to everybody in just his way of seeing things. He's unbelievable knowledge. And then we sort of sit him down and we throw sports at him, sometimes quite literally. We recently had him in the ring with the WWE wrestler.
Oh, wow. Wow, that would be... And, how did that
and
go?
The good news, well, the good news for everybody is that they threw me over the ropes and out the ring. And they did. I'm not kidding. They did. You don't have to be a big fan of WWE, but what it did teach me, and this is the whole thing about the podcast I co-host and I produce, is that I want people to go away having enjoyed what we've done, but having learned something along the way. And there's so much science in it. It is sport. There was an amazing amount of athleticism, and we look at things in that way. So we'll look at soccer, we'll look at American football, tennis, golf, baseball, you name it. We will find science in it and hopefully give everybody an even greater appreciation of what athletes are capable of doing, what they haven't even begun to think they can do yet, and move on from there. Anyway.
And then we have the fourth category, Gary, that probably people have no idea who you are. that don't belong to those other three categories, but hopefully we'll, by the end of this podcast, we'll fall in love with your dulcet tones.
Oh, there is a large percentage of the population of, who the hell is he? And I get that. I totally get that. So if you are listening to this and you are one of those people, nice to meet you. Hopefully you'll understand a little bit more about me by the time we've finished the show.
So usually we talk about what we've been watching on television or streaming for football. Obviously there hasn't been a lot on for us to talk about, but we have been watching some of the classic matches. We've watched some, actually last week I watched the Korean League. So the Korean League kicked off last Friday live on YouTube and Twitter. And that was a surreal experience because you had the K-League restarting. You had Simon Hill doing the commentating, who is a based in Australia. I think he's worked a lot with Fox Sports. He was commentating the game. It sounded like it was from his bathroom. It was just a very, very, very echoey.
Oh, what a great idea to sit in the bath with a microphone watching football and commentating. Yeah, that, I mean, you know, you've mentioned that and you put that thought in my head. That's exactly how I want to do it from now on.
And the game itself wasn't that great. It was a rain-soaked South Korean night and Gyeongbuk against Suwon, and ended up being a 1-0 win for Gyeongbuk. But it was live football, and it was the first time, other than the Belarus Premier League, which I've watched a few of those games, it felt like a real game. I thought this was going to be a game where they actually had the fans in the stadium because South Korea's a lot further along in terms of coming back from the coronavirus. With
they're still struggling. They've had to shut down certain things, nightclubs and stuff, because of little outbreaks. What's funny is a while ago now, I did the co-commentary on North Korea versus South Korea. It was a World Cup qualifier, and it was played in Shanghai on a neutral ground with a sum total of just about nobody in the stadium.
Right.
I've from the commentary point of view, I've done these games already. From a playing point of view, you would quite often play in empty stadiums when back in the day, and I can go back in the day, we as reserve teams, not under 23 or development squads, the reserve teams would play against other teams in the main stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And for a reserve team game on a Saturday afternoon while the first team was away, there was one man and no dog.
Right.
There was no, So you are used to playing in those kind of environments. As much as you didn't sign up to play to empty houses, that was the gig at the time. What you learn is once you go into a packed stadium, and if I can sort of unlock this as a process for our listeners,
mm-hmm.
you get used to a sea of faces. You don't recognize them, but you get used to the sound, the smell, everything about them. And when you take yourself out and put yourself back into an empty stadium, you receive a pass, you move it out of your feet, you go to look up, and you're thinking, right, you know what you want to do. It's a short pass, it's a long pass, it's a chip, whatever. You realize that no fans are there.
Yep.
And for a split second, it hits you. For a split second, you are taken aback by the fact there is something wrong with this picture. And it's weird. And then you kind of, as the game progresses, you kind of, the brain now has adjusted. They're not here, fine. We get on with our thing. The other thing is you can do something incredible. You dribble past someone, stick it through their legs, laugh at them and run around the other side, whatever it is you're doing. Normally, there's an instantaneous reaction from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You get the applause. You get the cheer. You get the roar. And I think psychologists or neuroscientists call it the observer effect. You do that, and there is a sea of silence.
Yeah, I mean,
right? And that's weird. That's weird. That's another level of messing in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got over the bump in the road where you've looked up and seen no faces, just empty stands and seats or terraces or whatever it is. Now you're losing the soundtrack of a game your own head.
Yeah,
it's going to take a lot of coming to grips with for players.
Yeah, especially with the Bundesliga kicking off this weekend. I mean, you've got some world-class footballers throughout the Bundesliga from all sorts of different countries, different backgrounds.
Totally.
I think most of these players are not used to playing in empty stadiums, though, not like, say, back in the day where some of the U21 games or the youth-level games might have been played in the empty stadiums. They're probably used to being played at a separate stadium, a youth training pitch or something with even youth football has fans. I mean, it could be 100 or 50. It's something. You get that reaction. Do you think some players will adapt better than others going into this weekend, trying to deal with those surroundings?
They will adapt. Some will find it a bit freakish, but I have to say, I don't see that as more as a bump in the road. I mean, imagine the last time Bayern Munich played in front of an empty house.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But bearing in mind it's Bayern Munich, bearing in mind these are superb Bundesliga teams, you think they haven't thought about that? They will have gone to their own, to the Allianz Arena, and they're saying, we're playing. Mm-hmm. There will be a full practice match in front of nobody.
Yeah.
So back in, so just to give you an example, back in the day when Tottenham, in the old White Hart Lane, demolished the West Stand and built this beautiful new stand. Mm-hmm. They took the whole thing out. So one side of the old White Hart Lane was complete building site, rubble, cranes, you name it.
Yep.
To get us used to the fact that that was no longer in our sight, that it was all weird, Keith Birkinshaw, the manager then, took us to play practice matches, a couple of them, at the stadium against the reserves just to get our heads right.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So that credit, total wisdom for that. And I can't believe in the Bundesliga, those guys haven't already played that card and anticipated that these are the problems that will be encountered. Let's take as much of that problem away.
And that happened a lot too in the 1980s, especially in England. A lot of those, you know, if you watch any highlights going back, a lot of the grounds were in the middle of refurbishment. You mean it's not like it's Anfield where they built this whole new, brand new stadium at this, you mean without tearing down the old one and just were able to, you mean build it and construct it without there being a big gaping hole. Back in the 80s, there were a lot of like ends, you know, especially like even in the beginning of the Premier League too, in the early 90s, where they'd be knocking down one end of the stadium, whether it's, you mean, Hillsborough or whatever. And they're building
Chelsea,
a new...
Stamford Bridge was another example.
Yeah.
They had those big boards behind the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal Palace did it as well. They put these big, giant boards up behind the goal and just painted them in the club colours and splattered them with logos,
right,
which is fair enough. It's real estate, advertising, make some money off it while you're losing money on being, you know, on grounds being developed.
Absolutely. And so speaking of White Hart Lane, so what I've been watching, so I watched the Korean League, and then I've been going down this rabbit hole of going onto YouTube, watching these old videos from the 1980s, watching Match of the Day. So
yeah.
I've got one in front of me right here, which is Tottenham Hotspur against Southampton in the FA Cup, 1983. It would have been January the 9th, I think it was. And Ozzy Ardiles was supposed to play in this game. They had him on the front of the program. But I guess they weren't able to get him cleared in time to actually get ready for the match. So
because he'd moved out to Paris Saint Germain.
Yeah, that's right, PSG.
And as such, I ended up rooming with Ricky Villa.
Oh wow!
Because Ozzy and Ricky were no longer the double act.
Right.
So the game White Hart Lane. If I remember right, we won that.
I think so, yeah. It's and I'm actually looking at the team sheet right here. So it had Ray Clements, Chris Hughton, yes. Gary O'Reilly.
Remember him.
That's right. Mickey Hazard, Steve Perryman.
Yep.
You had Steve Archibald, Ricky Villa, and a couple of other players. So I think there was – and it mentioned too in the actual Match of the Day, it mentioned that I don't think it was your debut, but I think it was your FA Cup debut – a 21-year-old named Gary O'Reilly, and they showed a couple of images of you getting ready to write pre-match, warming up.
That would have been an FA Cup debut, because I would have. Here's an interesting fact for you: I made my debut in 1980. All right, I'll unwrap this for you,
okay,
just to give you an idea of what it used to be like back in the day.
Sure.
I am 19 years of age. It's December the 26th. I'm on the bench for Tottenham at White Hart Lane. We are playing, because of the gods of the game, like this, Southampton.
Hmm.
And this is the Laurie McMenemy side with Kevin Keegan, Mick Channon, and all the rest of it.
Yep.
Dave Watson, Charlie George, they're all in there. I mean, a fabulous Southampton side.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing I do as a professional player is kick Mick Channon up in the air. Probably not the shyest teenager you'd ever meet, but that's life. We finished the game 4-4, December the 26th, this was, so Boxing Day. Now, December the 26th, 1980, was a Friday. Now, you're probably well ahead of me now, all our listeners. We played Norwich away on December the 27th, 1980.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
The next day.
What it used to be like. There was, yeah, you know what? It's Saturday. Boots on. Let's go.
Wow. No rest for the wicked there.
You know what? Try telling a 19-year-old kid, you don't have to do it. No, I'm in.
Right.
This is my dream. I'm a Spurs fan. I used to pay to stand at the Paxton Road end at White Hart Lane. You're not stopping me.
So, Gary, what do you think about when you hear Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp or, Mauricio Pochettino? I mean, you go down the list in terms of all these managers complaining about the fixture congestion and how many matches are being played. Do you see things differently now in terms of the way that football's played, say, back to the 1980s? Or do they not have much of an argument there?
I absolutely agree with them.
Hmm.
We were flogged. It's okay for a 19-year-old, at 19 years of age, you can jump tall buildings, stop trains with one hand, and probably stop bullets. That's the mentality you have. And it's the mentality, you're so vibrant at that age that, I can understand it. Now, you are asking a player to play with amazing intensity. And the modern game, if I can call it that, is more intense. It is at a faster pace. You are needing to be athletes, mm-hmm. not just great with the ball at your feet and do this, do that. You are needed to cover ground. You are needed to recover ground and recover to do it all again in X amount of seconds or minutes later. And these assets are precious. And you're tearing them to pieces.
Right.
You know, a player in training with a GPS tracker will push back a whole load of telemetric data to coaches and to medical staff, but they'll also be given bio data. And this will help a player and a coach to go, you know what? He's about to blow out.
Mm-hmm.
Get him or her out of the game, stop training. You don't play for two games because you're about to explode. You're a red flag. Now, I want you to play for the next 3 months, and I can do that if you rest two games.
Hmm.
Yeah, so you are managing assets. And as we know, these assets are precious. And I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. I mean that in the fact that you are paying them an awful lot of money. You have paid an awful lot of money for them. Why throw them under the bus?
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah, protect them, work with them, get the best out of them. You're paying them a lot of money. Make that money work. So, yeah, I'm with you. You have to think. I mean, why haven't England won a major trophy since 1966? Possibly because mm-hmm. they weren't good enough. I hear a lot of people screaming at me right now, and I'd say there is a point to be made there. Another factor is you look at how proud the English Premier League is as the most competitive and most talented, but definitely the most competitive league of all the leagues in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The team in the bottom are going to kick the team at the top's backside. I point you to nothing more than Watford versus Liverpool, not long before the season shut down, all right?
Right, yep.
It wasn't meant to happen. Guess what? It did. It did, because this is the English Premier League, and this is what can happen. You don't turn up, hand a team sheet in, say, we'll have our 3 points now, please. Let's not get our kit dirty. We can all go home. No, you have to earn it. You have to, what I call, reprove your status.
And that was the interesting thing, going back to a lot of these Match of the Days from the 1980s and going down kind of that nostalgia and kind of watching those matches, that I was taken aback by individuals. There were individuals with incredible talent, but as a whole, as far as the teams weren't as strong. They weren't as good as, say, teams in these days. In many ways, it's a different game, different, played at a different speed, different style of play. But I was just surprised by some of the matches, how poor they were. I mean, just in terms of basic skills in front of goal, in terms of shots going also, not being even on target. And the quality level for some players, and those are players probably that have faded off into the distant past that, you mean, names I could spat out that nobody would remember. But that was, for me, looking back, that was a big difference.
Chris, don't forget, we played on occasion on nothing better than a ploughed field.
Right, true.
I can remember playing games as a professional player at the highest level in about an inch and a half of mud.
Yeah.
Yeah, games that would never be played, fields that would never be allowed, and yet there they were. We got on and we did our thing. I mean, I back the talent and the athleticism of the players, a majority of the players back in the 80s. What they didn't have around them was the sophistication and structure that these players have today. Mm-hmm. If you'd have given them that, I'll back them. Yeah. I'll back them pound for pound on talent. I'll back them for ability to run. I mean, because it threw up athletes. You can't rise to a level and not have a substantial amount of athleticism. Mm-hmm. You can't rise to a level without an incredible amount of talent. And then there were occasions when those two combined, and then you found the phenom. They were out there, you know, players that could run all day and had talent to spare. I mean, I watched the BBC, I think it was 1983. Here we go. We're trapped into 83.
Okay.
It was a Friday night game, Manchester United versus Tottenham. Hmm. It was the first time, if I'm not mistaken, the BBC had shown on Match of the Day a live England top flight football game, league game, right?
Right.
FA Cup games they would, but league games they'd never done. Ozzy Ardiles, now you mentioned him, returned. Came on as a sub with basically his first touch, he scores. Mm-hmm. We pass straight through Man United, pop, in it goes. Also, Alan Brazil gets an overhead kick with an assist from himself, Gio Reilly. And that was part of the beginning of people understanding what could be served up for television. What a feast could be available sometimes. Slim pickings. Sometimes it was leftover Wednesday, but sometimes it was a four-course sumptuous a la carte meal.
Mm.
Game finished 4-2 Man United.
Wow.
I think the genie was out the bottle.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a bad game at left back. even though we lost 4-2,
right.
It wasn't a game I could pin my flag to and say, you look how good I was. You lost 4-2. I know, sorry. So the next game, I feel I've played really well. The next game we play is Watford away at Vicarage Road. Now, for those of you that don't know Glenn Hoddle, I direct you to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at a highlight reel of just what this guy did. And imagine that's in a game. How good was he in training?
Wow.
Yeah, he was that good. Do you remember the sort of Cruyff turn and the chip?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the one. He had a couple like that too.
Yeah, this was for Spurs against Watford, the next game after the 4-2 defeat at Old Trafford. Now, Steve Perryman was fit, so therefore I got bumped off the bench and sat in the stands. And I'm not happy because I think I've played really well and my performances didn't justify me being dropped as far as I was concerned. And Hoddle scores a goal like that.
Mm.
I can't knock on the manager's door.
Right.
What can I say? It's like, suck it up, Gary. This is what it's like.
Yeah.
When talent wants to be talent, this is the outcome. And we had that was the way it was. Moving forward, 1990. And we just had, in the past couple of days, well, as we're recording this, the 30th anniversary of the FA Cup final, Crystal Palace against Manchester United,
mm-hmm.
which the first game was a 3-3 draw. But if we take a step further back, at Aston Villa, at Villa Park, Crystal Palace played Liverpool. And that was the first semi-final. The second was Oldham versus Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first Super Sunday. They were being shown back to back, and it was the first time the BBC had ever done it. To put it into context, the Saturday was the Grand National horse race, which is always a big deal in the UK, big TV audience.
Yep.
Nick Faldo won the Masters in Augusta, the golf. Mm-hmm. And then the BBC, on top of that, had Crystal Palace 4-3, and I think into extra time, and then Oldham Man United was a similar scoreline. First time they'd ever done it. I was already being part of the first BBC live match of the day game, and now here I was in an FA Cup semi-final, the first time they'd ever done a Super Sunday.
Wow.
That's, yeah, I know. And it wasn't until someone was talking to me about it just recently for a newspaper interview that I realised that I was present in both of those moments for TV.
Right.
And if you think back to 1990, what follows on the heels of that moment is
right.
the Premier League.
That's right. Yeah.
In the Premier League TV deal, and all of a sudden, you've got Sky bringing forward Super Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
A wall of live games. And there we were. That was the test drive. And you, I think the two games threw up something like 13 goals.
And that's the thing, Gary. And that's the thing, Gary, is that I think up until maybe a few weeks ago, we took things like that for granted. We took a typical Sunday where you might have a early kickoff in the Premier League, say Arsenal against, West Ham or something like that, followed by usually kind of that 11 o'clock Eastern time Premier League match. I mean, it could be Manchester Derby or whatever it may be. And we took that for granted for years and years, watching those games, whether it's La Liga or Bundesliga or MLS. It's just watching games and having access to, what, a couple of hundred games a week on US television or streaming. And now we're at a point where, I think once it does come back, and yes, this weekend with the Bundesliga not having any fans in the stadium, which makes sense. But when it does come back, I think we'll feel... We'll appreciate it more. I think we'll actually look at it and go, the savor this a little bit more. Because in the past, maybe we thought, okay, this happens automatic. Nothing's going to stop this. But yeah, you're from you going back in the day in terms of kind of a lot of those matches. And at the time, those were revolutionary. Those were times where, like, matches on a Sunday, on television, God forbid. But now we take it for granted. But I think now we do appreciate it more.
I totally agree with you. I mean, we will see things, and I'm saying this intentionally, in a different way. We will mentally have, hopefully, a better appreciation of what we have, of actually what live football means to us. Appreciate everything that goes into it, from support staff to security staff to the merchandise sellers to vendors, to everybody, right? And the players and the coaches. Because if they don't all do their job, this thing doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the value that the partnership between the leagues and the TV has and what they bring to you. So it will be a different way of looking. And then they'll probably start to become a different way of viewing. We'll be looking, because we're now all esports fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not me, because I'm old and crusty. And, my laptop's made of wood, just as anyone's worried. We're very much into the realm of esports. We need something. We need this adrenaline rush. We need this excitement. So we've gone into our laptops and unlocked, or our Xboxes or PS, whatever, PlayStations, and done what we need to do.
Yep.
And if that's the way you're used to consuming, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that happen in the way that we view our live sport. You can take an option to have, and I think there's a few people already out there doing exactly this, with player tracking.
Mm-hmm.
So, it would be interesting to see how much towards the esports end of the spectrum that our viewing consumption goes.
It's a good point, because
I think it will evolve.
It's a good point, because a lot of people have been playing FIFA 20 or Pro Evolution Soccer or all these different video games out there during the break. What we have found, though, too, is that right now is that live soccer, real football, is no actually, well, FIFA or whichever video games are no substitute for live football. And I think part of it too is technology is we're not quite there yet. But that's not to say that in the future that that might get better and that actually might be closer to the real thing. And it might split the audience a little bit where people are watching Rocket League and then watching, I mean, FIFA 25 or whatever it is and getting more enjoyment out of that than, say, a boring 0-0 game, I mean, in some part in Europe. But
yeah, I mean, just we will decide. I mean, you've got to give me a reason. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think owners of sports franchises, and I use the plural here, you know, it'd be the NBA, NFL, hockey, football, soccer here in the US, they realize their competition isn't so much the other teams.
Mm-hmm.
The competition is Xbox. The competition is Beyonce. The competition is movies.
Netflix,
theaters,
right.
Whatever, Netflix or whatever. Because, I mean, Netflix are going through the roof.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone sat in front of their goggle box.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's give me a reason to come and watch your thing. Give me a really good reason why I should step away from what I'm doing to do what it is you'd like me to do. And I think the owners are going to find the solutions. And it'll be interesting to see what solutions they come up with.
Yeah, it's almost like we're going into a reset right now where, you mean, that people have been doing other things other than sports, and now all of a sudden sports is starting to come back little by little, but we have to almost win back that the viewers' time or kind of give them something to equate to value where they may have been watching Netflix and binge-watching or doing whatever, and they're getting value out of that. So speaking, Gary, of getting value out of watching live football, this weekend the Bundesliga back around the world, BT Sports doing kind of, I think they have live presentations of every game. They've got big, huge plans for this weekend. In the US, we've got Fox Sports that are going to go ahead and show the games across FS1, FS2, mm-hmm. and Fox Soccer Plus, as well as get the Spanish language stations, TUDN and Fox Deportes, that will be showing some of the games in Spanish. The big uproar is really that we were hoping and thinking that Fox would come out and say, okay, I mean, this is the only major sports league in operation around the world. Fox has the rights to them. Let's go ahead and put it on Big Fox. I mean, over-the-air Fox, I mean, nationwide to a much larger audience. And let's take our talent, you mean remotely, perhaps, and put them into this situation and have them analyze the game and introduce new people to the Bundesliga. Well, that's not going to happen. It's going to be on FS1, FS2, and Fox Soccer Plus. So hopefully, again, with the world feed, we've got the world feed for the commentary. So unfortunately, it means that Ian Joy and Keith Costigan won't be commentating these games. And it is going to be a surreal experience watching these games without any fans in the stadium. Hopefully they'll have some sounds of the crowd piped in just to kind of add some effects, but it's going to be a whole new ball game.
It is. I mean, what I do hope is if they do sort of stick the canned laughter, the crowd effects in, that it is sympathetic, because it's going to take someone who understands the nuances of when to put it in and not just, you know, for the sake of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or you either do too much, you do too little, or you get the timing wrong. And so it's going to have to take someone with a great deal of understanding and sensitivity. And I'm not saying they're not around
right.
at all.
Yep.
I'm just saying it will take someone of that capability. To address the point of, you know, Fox Sports, what's interesting is they have this opportunity to go big with it. But I think the mentality would be from anyone in the exec position at any of the mainstream broadcasters are, we probably don't want to be the first one out doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the old adage of the war, you don't want to be the first one over the top because they're the one that normally gets shot.
Right.
You know, not to, you know, people are passing away around us, so I don't take that lightly. It's that point that they don't want to be the one that takes all the flack and the heat for potentially getting it wrong, because there's a lot of potential that it won't work.
There's risks.
People don't gravitate to empty stadiums. It's, we've always said for years and years and years, if we've got half the crowd and we're in a big stadium, it's like a pea in a tin can. So what we'd do is we'd lock the cameras off on one side of the stadium, mm-hmm. put all the fans in the other side of the stadium, and that way, when your shot comes out, your long shot, your wide shot, you've got a stand full of fans. It looks good.
Right.
It looks much better. So to have intentionally no fans, it's going to be weird, and it might turn viewers off.
It could do, yeah, especially even TV viewers that are tuning in that may not have watched the Bundesliga before, and they're tuning in going, okay, this is it. This is, watching a game in an empty stadium is a completely different experience than watching a game in a stadium that's packed out with fans cheering and singing, and you have that background noise. And for the TV viewer, it's not going to be that exciting. I mean, even if Bayern Munich's winning 2-0 and it's good football, you're not going to have, like you said before, Gary, as far as kind of that feedback where you hear the oohs and the ahs and kind of the rise, the crescendo and the quiet and then kind of the tension sometimes in the stadium where the fans, you could tell they're getting upset, but they're not booing, but it's getting close to that. So,
I mean, how many times have you heard, Chris, the commentator, you can feel the tension in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel... The commentators, by the way, are going to have to work incredibly hard.
Yeah.
They are going to... And you can't... Like a radio broadcast, you have the chance to paint a picture because you don't have the images. With a normal TV broadcast, you're allowed to sit out and allow the pictures to breathe. You allow these things to develop in front of you, and then you just come in, paint a little bit, and then step back out again. So it's going to take a different style of commentary from both the play-by-play and the analyst to bring this thing to the right place.
It's interesting.
I mean, I can't sit there and criticize because, A, it hasn't happened, and, B, I'm not sure I'd quite like to be the one doing it, although I'm always up for a challenge. You know, it's as simple as that. Yeah, let's do this. Let's bring it on. I mean, the chance to get out there and do your thing, fabulous. But it will be a challenge, and you know, I'll applaud the guys for taking it on straight away.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the different extremes. You look at, say, a commentator who uses his words carefully. That's almost like a poet in some ways. But there's definitely spells in the game where there's quiet spells, and John Champion's a good example of that. Somebody who is very eloquent, but will use that quiet space sometimes. During a lull in the game and not say much. And then you've got, say, on the opposite end of the spectrum, someone like Arlo White or John Strong that's very talkative throughout the entire game. There's stats, there's conversations, there's stories, more of an American style. And for the Bundesliga, or any league really, the Bundesliga or the Premier League, once everything comes back, is you wonder, like, do they have to adapt their styles for these games? Or... You mean, and which style is better than the other? I mean, is it better to have someone talking nonstop, or it's going to be completely different for these commentators for sure?
Look, I mean, much the same as with the players, and I'll use the sort of umbrella term of football is a game of opinions, and that's regarding your team, your players, and the commentators. I don't like her; she's not very good. I don't like him; he's not very good either. So everybody has this opinion, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and we've all sat there and had the one-way conversation with the TV screen or with our laptop. We've all done it. Hands up, don't problem. Yep. Can't see you, but we know you've done it. So the fact of the matter here is that will always be the case. Now, those that go one direction, those that go the other, we will find which one is kind of more populist as regards that. And I don't think it's a major swing in stylization. I think it's more to the point where let's just tweak that this way. And you probably find that the producers, because if I'm thinking it, they're thinking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I produce podcasts. And I'm thinking about how this thing goes. I'm thinking about what direction do I want to take it? What is my destination? How do I want to get there? What are the points that I want to unlock on the way? And producers are the same in TV. Even though the game, the script isn't written. You just know who the actors are. You don't have the script yet.
So
you know how, you know the style in which you want to make it.
Right. Yeah, which is going to be, yeah, and that's one reason why too, I think with the Bundesliga leading the pack really this weekend, is I think the world will be watching, especially the other leagues, the other clubs, the other TV broadcasters, to see exactly how it feels. I mean, what is it like, and what do they do right, what do they do wrong? But one of the things too, Gary, is definitely as far as it affects mics, they're around the field, you'll hear the ball a lot more. You'll hear the players a lot more. If we go back in the time machine and went back to 1983,
you know what that means, Chris.
And you guys were mic'd up, what would we hear?
A lot of language. But what's the opposite of good, Chris?
Bad language. But would there be anything else though that we would hear? Anything else, or would it just be just kind of the fighting of words back and forth? Would there be anything else of?
It depends on how the game's going. Because if the game's going really well for one team, it'll all be good, positive encouragement. If it's not going in the right direction, there'll be a lot of straight talking to try and re-steer this in the direction we need it to go. Mm-hmm. They'll hopefully. You might hear a few things like, "I need you here. Sit in here for 5 minutes. I need 5 minutes of you sitting in here. I don't want you running off down there. I don't want you doing that. Sit. You better get tighter. You better cover me. Mark him. You know, all that sort of communication. I mean, you're looking. Right. Look to your goalkeepers, particularly at set plays, where you will have a lot of information being pushed around. Because I don't want him peeling off. I want him marked. Don't allow him to get in front. Everything like that. Mark tight. What are you marking the wrong side? Anything like that. Little small technical guides as to what they're trying to do. And then you can look at how the opposing team are trying to break away from that. What you would do normally, but you might get a little more insight from the soundtrack of the game, because there's no crowd interference, as you're highlighting. Mm-hmm. You know, this will be more about allowing you to hear certain things. I mean, then be prepared for the sprinkling of some bad language. We do swear, sorry, in advance. Spoiler, but you probably guessed that already.
Right.
I mean, hopefully it won't be too bad. And, you know, the referee will have some control over the game. I can't imagine there are some reasons where it'll be a complete meltdown, but then the referee will step in and issue a card of his favorite color, or her favorite color. So it's a situation we'll get. It'll be interesting. You will hear that. You know, when you first play the sort of FIFA games and you hear the tuh, of a player's foot on the ball, every time they touch it 2 feet, you hear the tuh. You will actually hear that. You will pick up a lot more of the natural soundtrack of the game, as I said, that would just be lost into the wall of sound that occurs throughout a full stadium. You'll hear people in the technical area. You'll actually hear what the coach is saying.
Right.
Because normally in a stadium that holds 50,000 people, I mean, I'm blessing or a curse, I can make myself heard quite some distance away. even in a full house.
Right.
But you really have to be able to throw your voice and project. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, if you're in a really big house, that voice doesn't carry more than 15, 20 yards. Mm-hmm. And that now, you'll be able to hear instructions. And you'll pick up people's voices and you'll realize there are certain people on the field that are leaders, naturally. Natural communicators that will come out. You'll pick things like that up. So yeah, that'll be a fun thing. I mean, it might actually unlock a little bit more enjoyment for fans, rather than what they're, because it's something that's always there. It's just lost in the soundtrack of the noise of everything else that's going on.
Yeah, and I think that absolutely that's going to be something different that we've never really experienced. Like, I mean, sometimes in different stadiums, if it's, I don't know, Villa Park or Anfield or wherever it is, I've kind of imagined what it would sound like if you were sitting behind the dugout. I mean, and being able to listen to the managers, you know, shouting and screaming, and
see, that would be great. The technical instructions from the coaches, that would be great.
Yeah,
I can see Guardiola in a technical era trying to land what looks like a large plane on a runway, right? Waving his arms around. But I haven't a clue what he's saying.
Right, yeah.
Now I just might. Yeah. Now I just might be able to get an insight into how he sees this game. Because I'm seeing the same game. Mm-hmm. In fact, as a TV viewer, I've got a better view of it than he has.
Right, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've got all of these different camera angles. He's got pitch side through his eyes. That's it.
Right, yeah.
So, it'll be interesting if you pick up that soundtrack from the technical area. Oh, look what he's making them do there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do the detective work. What's he seen?
Right.
What's he seen?
What happened?
Because we're not all A-list coaches. We're not all celebrity soccer managers.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch the same game, but doesn't mean we see the same things in the game. So what has he seen that I haven't?
Yeah.
And why has he reacted in that way? So you kind of drilling down into what is really making this game tick. What I'm talking about here is the stuff I would do in a broadcast anyway.
Right.
I would always be looking for, why is this happening? Oh, if this allows to go on, this is going to be whoops. This is... We're going to need the calculator. Get the calculator. This game's going in a certain direction. You know, these sort of things that are going on. And then something's happened, you haven't seen it, and you go, whoa, what am I looking for? And you start to question, and you unlock the scenarios that are happening. All of a sudden, there's a formation change within a game.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to work out why. What's the coach trying to achieve by making this alteration? Why has this player been pushed on in this one particular area only?
Yep. So I think yeah. Gary, then the halftime analysis and the post-match analysis in the studio would also be more interesting. It should be more interesting because they'll be able to pick up on things as we, the actual listeners and viewers, will too. So it should accentuate those analysis if you got the right people in the studio who can look at those in more detail and kind of the COCOM definitely, as far as being able to look as the game's happening. But sometimes the studio analysts will have maybe a little bit more video to look at or a little bit more time to kind of focus on something.
It will also be the persona of your guests as to how they see it. Now, there were discussions going on about players who tackle each other, which will happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's football. It's a contact sport. You have to turn your head away. Are they all going to be wearing masks? What if? What if someone sneezes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ever seen as vulgar as it is to some people, you are going to see players spit.
Mm-hmm.
Just seems to be a natural bodily function during a game. You produce saliva. You don't want it. You get rid of it.
Right.
Now, players will sweat. It's a physical activity. You're asking a lot of your body. And you're going to have contact. How do you mark? How do you get into all of this stuff we've taken for granted because that's how you play the game? And then psychologically, how are the players going to react? Are we all of a sudden going to see no tackles?
Right. Yeah.
Are we going to see someone going, no tackles? Are you serious? Whack. Okay, I'm going to say the obvious here. You know there's one in every team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes there's more than one. It just depends. So it depends on how the players will interpret it, how the coaches interpret it, what their instructions are to them about tackling, and that comes from the officials, and that will then come from the league. And then how the guests in the studio and the commentator, the play-by-play and the analyst interpret what they're seeing as to what will come out in terms of the broadcast. So I think there's interest and on all levels. And I credit the Bundesliga for being the first one out to launch a major sports league back into this environment. They are the guinea pigs and we should be grateful for them for making this happen. But every and they've said, haven't they, all along, that they will give all of the information that they accrue from returning to action and sharing it with all the other major leagues, no matter what sports around the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's brilliant. Because if that helps, then that's I mean, we're in that part where, you know what, we need to appreciate each other. We need to cross-pollinate between ourselves. And we do this anyway. There's a lot of sharing of intelligence between the sports, more so than you think. You know, a lot, it's not public, but it goes on. You know, coaches' thoughts and understanding of their own sport has been enhanced by learning from coaches in other sports.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're looking at the Bundesliga for this weekend. So in terms of the timetable of other leagues coming on track, it looks like the Portuguese Primeira Liga is going to start at the end of May. Next up after that, and again, all these are tentative dates because it depends on governments and football associations and players and contracts and TV broadcasters. But the Premier League is looking at June 1st. La Liga is looking at June 12th. You got the Turkish Super League that's also looking at June 12th. Then you've got Serie A that's looking at June 13th. And Major League Soccer, which is either end of June or June 1st, July 1st. And the game plan right now, although not completely nailed down yet, is to have all the teams go to Orlando, Florida, and then play within the Disney Wide World of Sports complex and have the players in the hotels nearby. So it looks like, I mean, again, the Bundesliga, fingers crossed, everything goes okay this weekend. And they're taking it match week by match week to see how they're looking at it as a probation period. And I think that's the right move to make. And then hopefully things will start picking up with the other leagues starting soon. And before you know it, in June or July, we'll be watching a lot more live football, albeit behind closed doors.
Yeah, I would imagine so. That's if everything goes in the right direction. I think what was important was the fact, and I think just to add to that, I think the British government have just announced that they are open to a return to football. Mm-hmm. And there've been discussions between the government, Premier League and the FA, and how that is, you know, the viewing situation as regards the game. So there seems to be some movement in the direction towards games coming back, but they haven't pinned a date to it. What was interesting in the Bundesliga is they said if they get a case of coronavirus, that won't shut them down.
Right.
And I think that was the moment where if and when that happens, do they flinch? Mm-hmm. Do they back off, or do they say no? Let's not panic. It's one case. We can control this. And how they control it and what's going on. So, and I think those situations, they're the real learning experience that everybody's looking towards. How do I film a live game? Well, we know that's not a problem. We can deal with that. Even if I'm using remote cameras, remote controlled cameras, I know how to do that. That's been taking place for a while. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
I think you cited the Korean League, South Korean League coming back. I think their cameras were remote controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think USL, if I'm not mistaken, were using remote controlled cameras in their broadcast for a couple of years. So that technology and ability to direct from a remote place has been tested. That's not an issue. The issue is if and when we get a COVID outbreak, be it one, be it two, how we react. And I think that's the thing everybody is looking at with the Bundesliga as to how they cope with that. Everybody in terms of the wide sports, everybody in terms of the game of football is looking at how the Bundesliga are instructing the game to be played.
Mm-hmm.
How tight is man marking? How are we going about tackling? Right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Are players wearing masks? Are players not wearing masks? So there's these little bits and pieces that will fit together to give us the bigger picture. So that's another side of things that I think everybody is keen to see how that works, how that performs, what shape it presents itself in, as much as all the things we've just discussed as regards how we view and, you know, how we enjoy it and what areas we look to gain a new insight into the game, if that's what we want.
And then in two more news items, first up is that Netflix has scored movie rights to the iconic 1999 U.S. women's soccer team winning the World Cup, Women's World Cup. So this is a movie that's going to be produced and filmed by Netflix and coming to Netflix probably next year. That'll be interesting to see, like who they pick for the different. You mean the different girls on the women on the team?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful story, and yeah.
Yeah, Brandi Chastain, in penalty kicks, winning it. Thinking, yeah.
Who plays who?
Yeah. You know, who
you know, the players are sitting there going, "Well, I know who I want to play me."
Right. Exactly.
And it's not going to be her. So all of those little things that go on. So that's good. I mean, considering the news that we had the other week about their equal pay, mm-hmm. I think that as much as that doesn't compensate for it, that would be a plus.
Absolutely,
for the U.S. women's national team. So
it's definitely a positive good. There. And then one more news item. This is interesting. This is very different. This Saturday, LAFC, so Los Angeles Football Club, are doing something quite mm-hmm. unique. What they're doing is they're broadcasting the full 90 minutes of a radio commentary of a game that has never been played. Well, never been played this season, which is 100% completely in the imagination of the commentator. So it's going to be LAFC against LA Galaxy in the mind of LAFC radio commentator Dave Denholm. So he's going to broadcast the game on Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, between LAFC and LA Galaxy. And he's going to commentate the game as if it's been played in front of his own eyes. And he's going to commentate the entire 90 minutes, the highs and lows, everything in between, and call it as if he's seeing it in front of his mind and then broadcasting that.
Okay. Now my head hurts.
Right.
Because, as I've said already in this broadcast, football, you know who the actors are, right?
Yep.
In this performance.
Right.
The script hasn't been written yet.
Yeah.
To do this, and I admire it, because I admire the creativity, and I'm thinking, come on, I'll do your co-coms. I'm up for this. This sounds this sounds mad enough for me to do.
Right.
The script has to be written. You've got to in your mind, you already know the score.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's going to score and how they're going to score. You set all this up. You even know the time they're going to score because it's in your head, dude. You've got to have written this already.
Yeah.
So that in itself is a work of art. We'll see if we like this particular piece of art or not. But it, as a concept, I think, it's a great imagination. Whether it works, we will see.
it should be interesting.
It is weird.
Yeah, I mean that's something almost like it's like every childhood schoolboy's fantasy is to be, you mean, in his bedroom kicking the ball around and posters on the wall and in his mind commentating a game or pretending to be, you mean, I don't know, Gordon McQueen or whoever it is.
Who's the commentator?
So it's Dave Denholm, who's the commentator. Right. Commentator for LAFC.
Does Dave subscribe to this podcast?
He does. Yeah, he listens. Yeah, absolutely.
Good, Dave. This is for you, dude. Direct, straight from me. Please do it. Lying in your bath.
We'll see. Yeah.
You, a mic, your imagination, possibly a script. Do it from your bath, because I think that then gives you a kudos above and beyond. I mean, I love the concept. I think it's mad enough for me to enjoy, but it needs to be done in the bath, because that then just really ties it all off in a bow.
Okay, good point there. Absolutely.
Oh, they're gonna lock me away soon enough. Hopefully not that soon.
And then, Gary, if you have just a few more minutes, we just run down some listener mailbag from the listeners.
Yeah,
first up is JP. JP says, "Hi, guys. I have to disagree about your views on people's appetite for live sports. The Michael Jordan documentary is doing so well because everyone is starved of new sports content. It's always It always would have been popular since it's Michael Jordan, but to the extent it's become appointment viewing is a function of there being nothing else sports-wise to look forward to that hasn't been seen already. The classic games gimmick was interesting for a few weeks, but as Christopher has seen already and noted about the TV ratings, we have grown tired of it. I do believe the Bundesliga ratings will see a bump, provided Fox markets it so the casual fans are aware of it, of course. Consider myself on the extreme end as a sports fan, so my view may not apply to all. However, I even watched some of the esports from MLS last week and actually found myself enjoying it solely because the end result wasn't known. I'd probably watch a rock, paper, scissors tournament, to be honest. Hell yeah, I'll make sure to watch the Bundesliga and pray it goes well and paves the way for Serie A, La Liga and Champions League to return too. Then if that goes well, there's hope for NHL and NBA returning their season playoffs, at least over here. That's a good point too, Gary, too, because it's not just the Premier League and Serie A that's watching this and the other leagues from around the world, but you've got the NFL, you've got college football, you've got other sports too watching this and seeing, okay, what is the Bundesliga going to do?
I told you, they're the guinea pig. Yeah. And they're being watched not just by the leagues, the football leagues around Europe. Every single sport wants to see how have they done this? How have they made it A, successful or B, not successful? How, you know, where do we learn where to go? Where do we learn where not to go? So they're right. I mean, let's address this with the important thing first. I have played rock, paper, scissors on radio.
Really?
Live radio on BBC. There's a show on BBC 5 Live called Fighting Talk.
Yep.
On Mondays. I was on with a Canadian broadcaster over here called Greg Brady.
Okay.
And he and I played rock, paper, scissors. I beat him with back-to-back rock, which was just, you know, once you've played rock, paper, scissors on radio, it's not something you forget. Now, back to the, to use a phrase from Eminem, back to reality. The Michael Jordan thing, I have had my eyes glued to it every Sunday, and it's not a surprise. Duh, we know what the score was, dude. We know how many championships you've won.
Yep.
What we didn't know was the backstory. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that he did that and she didn't talk to him. And he went where? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you, it's like the Rodman thing where the coach comes in, Jackson comes in there to Michael and says, right, you know, Dennis wants to go to Vegas for 48 hours. He went, he ain't going for 48 hours. And then Michael was right, and it's like, what were, you must have, and you knew that there was this fabulous list of characters, and it wasn't the game, it wasn't sport. This is storytelling. This is what got us. It was always going to be a hit anyway. If you steal the oxygen away and then you offer some oxygen back, you know that some people are going to take a deep breath. A lot of people are going to take a deep breath, and that's what they've done on the back of The Last Dance. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is. I mean, watching sport is about opinions. As I said, football's a game of opinions. Whether you're talking about the players, the teams, the coaches, or how the thing is broadcast. So there's no right, wrong. There's just that's your opinion, and this is my opinion.
Next up is Ricky Worthy, and Ricky says, I'm with you, Chris. I couldn't care less about classic matches. I will be setting my alarm clock to make sure I'm up for every second of the Bundesliga reopen this weekend. Ratings will be off the charts. Next up is Shane Rowe. Shane Rowe says, I think Bob Costas would make a magnificent football commentator. I'm not sure if you watch basketball or baseball for you to be familiar with him, which I know who he is, but he says his commentary is brilliant and dramatic.
I know the name, and I've heard some of his work. And
I've seen him more as a presenter.
But some of the other guys should come in and do different sports. And, I mean, you know there's a few of the boys back in the UK are more than capable of covering a handful of sports equally as well as they cover football.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a. Unless football is completely alien to someone like Bob Costa, let them have at it. Mm-hmm. Because it's always an interesting way to see, you know, how they do it. I mean, I know a guy back in the UK. He's actually the producer of Fighting Talk, a guy called Simon Cross. Baseball, ice hockey, yeah. Give him a football game, he'll do it, and he'll do it brilliantly. So they're out there. The guys, you know, the guys, the multi-sport commentators are out there. They're more than capable. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Costa can come in and do it.
And the next up is Mike Hansen. Mike says, if they aren't going to use Big Fox in this situation, you know they were never really invested in the Bundesliga. With no other leagues or sports on, this is their time to shine and advertise all their properties during the game when the spotlight is on them. Just another swing and a miss from Fox Sports. And then last but not least...
go back to that. If we can, Chris. Sorry, go back to that. I mean, I sound like I'm a spokesperson for Fox Sports. I'm not. But I look at it maybe because I'm at a distance and slightly in a pragmatic way. I'm not Fox Sports losing the Bundesliga as of the end of this season?
Yep, correct. To ESPN Plus, right.
Right. So... as such, they may have made a corporate decision as to the fact that is it then worth investing? And it will take some investment from a whole load of other people and corporate execs to bring it into the bigger environment if they're not going to have it for any length of time. Because they may feel that they'll be building an audience only to lose them in 5 minutes' time. That's a thought that I have.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm right. It's just the thought that I had once I heard that point being made. So next one up.
Yeah. It's a valid point too. And it is one of those things that you wonder if they could build that audience a little bit and then gravitate them over to Major League Soccer when MLS returns and then have, you mean, larger audiences for MLS if that's possible. But a valid point, definitely. And the last question we have is from Raymond Orozco. And Raymond says, how will this pandemic hurt women's investment at the club level, particularly in Europe? And Gary, this is something too. I mean, we haven't gotten into this, but we know that the financial impact of the coronavirus throughout world football, it's not just England, but throughout world football is enormous. And clubs are strapped for cash. I mean, I'm sure some clubs will be going out of business at different levels. We don't know who those clubs are yet until the hammer drops, so to speak. And women's football, even though that women's football is growing, I think it's going to be one of those things that if a club has X amount of dollars or pounds available or euros in their budget and they're looking at, okay, the training academy, they're looking at the first team, they're looking at the women's team, is they will have to make cuts. And it's bound to happen, I would think, that at some places, some clubs are going to say, well, let's just go ahead and get rid of the women's program because that's unfortunately on the bottom of their pecking order.
It may well be.
Yeah.
As saddening as that is to say, it may well be. We are, once we come out of this, and God willing, we come out of it in a good shape and soon, I couldn't tell you what the landscape will be. I think there'll be some well-known clubs go out of existence. I mean, the Premier League teams might be more exposed than people think. They might be. I don't know yet. We'll see how that plays out. Mm-hmm. The peripheral sides of clubs, and I think it's a fair point to look at, there'll be a profit and loss stance taken.
Yep.
You know what? Does this make us money? Does this lose us money? Where do we stand to make more money? And always it'll be the first team. What costs us money? Having six or seven teams in different areas, that costs us money. We don't make any money from it. Vroom.
Right.
Move them off.
Yeah.
You know, we cut down those programs for the time being. We cut down those programs permanently. I mean, that's the big deal with players who, and the unions getting involved and saying, no, we don't want players to take pay cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is we're in these circumstances. You take a pay cut of 10, 15, 20% or however much it is. And then that becomes established as the new normal.
Right. The new reality.
What is 80% of your wages has now become your 100% wage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And then you'll still be asked to, you know, to donate and do things, and some players will. Let's be fair, some players will. And I think what's happened is the unions have said, why don't you pay the guys 100% of their contract right now? And if I'm wrong on this, I apologize, just me thinking about it. That way, the government, and whichever government it is, gets a return in terms of a higher value of tax. So, for instance, if they earn 100,000 euros, dollars, pounds, whichever currency sign you want to put in front, and they're in a 50% tax band, that's 50% in, right? That's 50,000 in. Then they make a donation themselves. Then they do that. So the government is able to continue to fund the infrastructure with high-end tax, because if you reduce the wages, then you reduce the tax that you're able to take out of them. And therefore, when this thing comes back, it's still 100%, but everybody's got a piece of the action.
Right.
That's one theory. Whether that's viable, workable, it's just a thought that struck me.
Yeah.
As we discussed it here.
Yeah, the other thing, though, too, about this is even before the coronavirus hit, is a lot of football clubs were desperately in financial ruin. I mean, you look at Bolton Wanderers as one example, but so many clubs are on the brink right before this. So you imagine what they are afterwards. Right.
Sorry, Krista Kardakoshi, look at the championship.
Yeah.
There were numbers came out before all of the leagues got shut down. The English championship was running at an average of 107% of their turnover on players' wages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know our listeners don't need a calculator to work out how bad that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
that is not a sustainable model in the best of times.
Right. Yeah, because I think it was more than half of the teams in the championship were in huge debt. You mean they're spending more than the money that they had, and that was three clubs go up. You mean it's not half of the actual championship goes up. So it's a roll of the dice. It's a risk. And then some clubs feel that they have to pay those amounts of money in order to be contending with a chance to get up into the Premier League and to make the hundreds of millions of pounds, however much it may be. But so going back to Raymond's point is that from the women's side and the men's side, there's bound to be some casualties, unfortunately.
It is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because it is the gross of the game. It is the well-being and gross of the football family.
Globally.
Enjoyed by all players,
mm-hmm.
no matter what gender.
Yep.
You are building and building and building, and this has the potential to be a major setback. Because if you take away the elite level, right, what's your aspiration? What's your target going to become? We set goals to achieve. What will those goals be? If you take away the elite women's game,
mm-hmm.
We're talking about Netflix making a movie for the U.S. women's national team and the success in 1999.
Yep.
99. Yep. And you are championing that occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine coming through college, those players, if there wasn't anything, if there's no elite women's football in the U.S., around the world. That's the problem. It's going way back. When you were a college player here in the U.S., during the late 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm.
say, you came out of college, where could you go? You were a very talented young soccer player. You had an education, but you could play, say, under 23, U23 U.S. men's team.
Mm-hmm.
What was your club environment? Where could you go from there here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it was basically semi-professional, really amateur level at that point with the American Professional Soccer League, APSL, and the American Soccer League, ASL. Yeah, it was low level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those players just went, okay, and they disappear.
Right.
They disappear from the football playing landscape. There's nothing really for them to do but turn their back on the game unless that's, you know, it's a niche they have to scratch. Mm-hmm. And they continue and they continue and they continue into a different direction.
Yep, yep. So it's...
That's the scenario now. If you take that away from the women's game, they're coming through college, they have these aspirations to become an elite player in an elite club. Oh.
Right. Right now what?
I can't,
exactly.
I can't build a life. That's not a living. That's a semi-professional. That's not going to be enough. I need a job and try and achieve this. Mm-hmm. It's you know, that's in these times.
Yeah, it changes people's behavior. You mean it changes their career course? It changes their entire lives. So.
Totally.
So yeah, so hopefully Raymond and the listeners too, hopefully, I mean, there's going to be casualties, we know that from the impact of this, but hopefully we'll all pull through it together somehow and start rebuilding and continuing to grow the sport in this country and around the world, really, because this is having dramatic impacts. So
totally, I agree with you. I mean, around the world, you're right to point out this is the global game.
Absolutely.
And it will, you know, it will have an impact in so many places.
Right. Well, we want you to have your say, listeners. So if you do have any feedback, any opinions about any of the things we've covered in this show, or any questions about streaming or watching games on television, any feedback about Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga, which we'll be talking about in depth next week on the next podcast, let us know. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on the website, worldsoccertalk.com. And Gary, what about you? So where can listeners catch you, either through radio or just keep up to date on all the latest things you're doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
If they want to come and see me, I'll be doing lots and lots of yard work. And I can't wait for live football to come back on the TV, because that is my cast iron excuse not to go out in the yard and move any more mulch, dig up things, plant things, etc. Right, on the point you addressed, anywhere you get your podcasts, please go to StarTalk Sports Edition. You will find me and the wonderful Neil deGrasse Tyson. If you like him, then you'll find him and I co-hosting with him. Also, SiriusXM FC, channel 157, I believe it is. I pop up on there. Do the Grumpy Pundits with Rodney, with Tommy, with Tom Rennie. So that'll be where I am. If you'd like to hear me anywhere else, let Chris know, and
sure.
we can discuss.
Absolutely.
Because we do lots of things remotely. I mean, just been doing a lot with Crystal Palace TV recently because of the 30th anniversary of an FA Cup final. I think Dom Fifield has got an article coming out in The Athletic this weekend.
Yep.
And so, that's another place that if you subscribe to The Athletic, you should be able to find me. But anywhere you get your podcast should be able to find StarTalk Sports Edition. Some interesting things. We've done WWE wrestler, Austin Creed, a drone league racing champion, Paul Nakala. Very interesting.
Huh.
Tony Gonzalez, the former Kansas City Chiefs legend, this show with him. We just tomorrow night we'll have a show going out on sports genetics. With a former Stanford professor, a guy called Dr. Stuart Kim. He's working. He's founder of a company called AxeGen. They work in sports injury with the analysis of genetics. So they've got one or two interesting things going on. But we talked to him and find out some more about the world of genetics and sport, which is really, really interesting and has so much more to unlock in terms of what we can know about ourselves and our sports.
Yeah, well, that's pretty deep. And actually, I think for a lot of our listeners, we love that kind of deep, really kind of really kind of thought-provoking content, so whether it's football or whether it's science or kind of the blend between the two, which would be sports and science. So definitely check out that show too.
Then we're perfect. We're perfect because we always say it's the point where geeks and jocks collide. You know, we find the science in every single thing, and it's not just physics. It's every aspect of it. It might be the neurology. It might be genetics. It might be biomechanics. It might be the data analytics. It might be the use of AI. Every facet we find and bring. So yeah, if that's for you, go check out the podcast. Love to hear you.
Perfect. Well, thank you.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Well, thank you for listening. And you can get a new episode every Thursday on the podcast players on YouTube. If you like the show, share it with your friends on YouTube and social media, and give us a review on iTunes. And enjoy your football.